Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, I'll tell you what, we got a great show for you here this morning. We got a lot to talk about, including more on this story that I shared on our Montana Talks website yesterday afternoon. The Department of Homeland Security now confirming that this violent Venezuelan gang, Tren de Aragua, is in Montana. They have a presence in Montana, along with apparently about 15 or 16 other states all across America. Talk more about that story here later in the hour. Plus, more of our coverage as the Montana Farm Bureau annual 105th annual convention is underway in this very building right now as we speak. So we'll have more coverage from the Farm Bureau convention as well. But first up, we've got a great guest here in studio. Andrew Bilstein is a lawyer in Billings, Montana. He's a partner with his law firm, Bilstein, Munson and Small. But he is one of the non-voting members helping out the Montana State Legislature. He is serving on the Senate Select Committee on Judicial Oversight and Reform. And Andrew, thanks so much for joining us here in studio, because I've been wanting to talk more about our judiciary and some of the reforms that are being talked about. So it's great to get a civilian's perspective, you know, because we get to hear from the politicians, the Democrats and the Republicans all the time. But it's kind of nice to just hear a civilian's take, if that's what we want to call it. So thanks for being with us.
Yeah, good morning. Happy to do it.
It's kind of funny. You were telling me how you got involved with this Senate Select Committee on Judicial Oversight and Reform. You were reading a news story that they were setting this panel up, and you had read how the Democrats weren't going to participate in this, and you were sitting back thinking, well, wait a minute, somebody needs to give an alternative viewpoint here. So you raised your hand and said, I'll volunteer to be a part of this.
Yep, that's accurate. Yeah, until fairly recently, my wife and I lived in a part of Billings where we were kind of a blue enclave, and saw the article saying that the Democratic Party members weren't going to participate. And I thought, well, those folks have always been my representatives, and they ought to have somebody kind of sort of representing them on there. So I volunteered, and I don't know if I was the only volunteer or I was the prettiest pig at the fair, but I ended up on the committee.
How did you describe yourself? As like a raving independent. And so you're not a Republican, you're not a Democrat. I think you told me that you like to throw away your vote to third parties all the time. So you truly are kind of an independent voice on this panel.
Yeah, I'm sure who you asked that question to, you'd get a different answer what they think of me, if they think of me at all. But yeah, I would hold myself out as somebody who proudly throws my vote away.
So. The Republicans would describe you as a Kamala Harris leftist, and then the Democrats would describe you as a MAGA Republican, huh?
Yep, that's what some have said. Yep.
Well, I saw one headline here recently from one of the liberal blogs, Senate Committee on Judicial Oversight proposes creation of new court. So that sounds like an interesting topic. What are some of the other reforms that are being discussed? We'll get to that and more right after this quick break here with Andrew Bilstein joining us on Montana Talks.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
So I don't need to go into too much background here, because I think our listeners are pretty well up to speed about the concerns over the judiciary here in Montana, you know, particularly the what is considered the partisan makeup of the Montana Supreme Court, and basically where, hey, here's these Montanans. They vote for these legislators to go to Helena to pass laws. They voted for a governor to either sign or veto those laws. And then they pass all of these laws. They pass, all of these bills that get signed into law by the governor. And then you know, what many of us see as partisan activists on the Montana Supreme Court just take those ideas and throw them into a trash can, or a district court judge says, nope, I don't like that, overruled. And it just seems like such an abuse of power. And so that I think, is what has really necessitated that, and then some other concerns about transparency within the court system and more oversight, accountability, ethics, et cetera, I think is really what drove the Republican majority in the legislature to create this Senate Select Committee on Judicial Oversight and Reform. But yeah, great to have Andrew Bilstein here with us here, you know, an independent, a lawyer who is a non-voting member of this committee. Andrew, what's been some of the more interesting ideas that have been discussed from your standpoint in this committee?
Yeah, there's several of them, and kind of the way the committee's functioned is we've had lots of meetings, lots of presenters advising us on different areas of the law and situations where different branches of government have been butting heads before. And some of the things we've talked about doing are establishing specialty courts. The concept behind that would be, you know, our poor district court judges and Supreme Court justices spend the morning working on criminal matters, and then the afternoon working on a child abuse and neglect case, and then after that working on a divorce, then maybe a will dispute, and then all of a sudden a constitutional issue ends up before them. And so trying to establish courts where judges are able to focus a little bit. You know, as a lawyer, I have a pretty specific expertise in the type of law I practice. You still have the old, do-everything lawyers out there, which is incredibly difficult. So one thing we've been talking about is trying to help judges have the ability to specialize a little bit and have a greater expertise in certain issues. Another thing that's been talked about that would be a controversial one is partisan elections. Right now, judges, in theory, run in a nonpartisan manner. The potential legislation that would be proposed would be making it optional, where judges can affiliate with a party but don't have to do so. And then a third one that comes to mind is establishing what other states call a judicial performance evaluation commission, where you have different branches of government and potentially other stakeholders that nominate people to talk to judges in the middle of their term about how they're doing, things they could be doing better. And then potentially, if judges are running for re-election, providing a voter guide for voters to get a little more educated background on what judges are doing.
Yeah, see, I could understand a concern. If there was a concern out there of, hey, we shouldn't force judge candidates or Supreme Court candidates to have to declare a party affiliation, although they could always say independent if they wanted to. But to make it optional, I mean, if a judge wants to say, hey, I generally affiliate with the Republican Party or I generally affiliate with the Democrat Party, I like the idea of making that optional, because one thing I hear from our listeners is we get zero information about so many of these judicial candidates that we don't know who or what we're really voting for. I mean, we don't care about what sports you played in high school and where you got your law degree from necessarily. I mean, that's a nice to know, but there's some other need to knows, like, well, what's your philosophy about the Constitution and things like that. How have those conversations been going thus far? I know it's a little hard when the Democrats have refused to participate, but at the end of the day, the Republicans have the majority in the legislature. So, but how has that conversation been moving forward thus far?
Yeah. As to that specific bill, I think the committee, you know, is voting to propose that bill to the legislature at large, and who knows what'll happen there. Just my personal view, which is nothing more than my personal view, is I think partisan judicial elections are dangerous. I think it brings into play lots of conflict of interest issues when somebody's identified with a party and donors to parties. How should judges react to that? But also my other view of it is, if the public already has a sense that's what's already happened, we just don't admit it. As a real loose analogy, I kind of lost interest in the NBA when traveling was still a rule, but nobody cared anymore. I think generally speaking, you know, if we're already there, we're better off admitting it.
Let's be honest and transparent. About, well, it's like in this latest Supreme Court election, again, whether you supported Bidegary for the Montana Supreme Court or Judge Dan Wilson, you know, Judge Bidegary and Judge Wilson, it was very clear there was an ideological divide if people were paying attention. I mean, Bidegary got a lot of money from far-left interest groups like the ACLU, Planned Parenthood, and others. And so it's like, why not just put a party affiliation or at least allow it if that's what's actually happening here? So, yeah, fair point on that front. I like this idea about having a special court for constitutional questions. I just saw a headline here today that Governor Greg Gianforte is looking to add three new district judge positions in Yellowstone County alone because of just frankly, the need. And I think all of our courts are seeing a backlog in terms of personnel, time, staff. I've even had a Democrat Gallatin County attorney tell me that very same thing. And so why would we want to tie these judges down dealing with some big constitutional question involving the legislature and et cetera, when they've got criminal cases and, you know, other big cases that they were already facing a backlog on. So we'll talk about that and more. Another quick break here on Montana Talks as we talk with Andrew Bilstein, a lawyer serving on this Senate Select Committee.
Taking your calls live, 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Hey, if you want to jump in on this conversation concerning the Senate Select Committee on Judicial Oversight and Reform, give us a call right now, 406-294-0970, or you can message us on the Montana Talks app. And then coming up in the second half of the show, starting a little after 9:40, we'll open up the phone lines to anything and everything you want to talk about. We'll talk more about this confirmation from the Department of Homeland Security that Tren de Aragua, that violent Venezuelan prison gang, is now confirmed to have a presence here in Montana. And I know many of you are not surprised by this news, given the all of the criminal cases we've been seeing and all the problems with drugs already from the Mexican drug cartels. So no big surprise that another gang is deciding to move in the midst of this wide open southern border as well. So we'll get to that more coming up in the second half of the show. Andrew Bilstein, special courts, are they looking at just a special court for constitutional questions? Are there other types of special courts that are being brought up for the state of Montana, just like how we have a water court that handles, you know, water issues? What other types of special courts are they looking at, and what would that look like, basically?
Yeah, so certainly it's broader than just constitutional issues. Mainly, as much constitutional issues, it would be focused on business matters. So if you were a litigant in the Montana court system and you suggested somebody breached your construction contract and it was over a certain dollar amount, you would go to the chancery court or business court instead of the district court like you would now. And potentially have a, you know, docket that is more specifically tailored to move in those matters towards conclusion. The constitutional part of it, the thought there is, in addition to judges having a little bit more of an ability to specialize, I think trying to avoid some of the forum shopping you see right now, where the cynic would suggest plaintiffs in constitutional cases are sometimes less people that are injured by that law and more live in a place where the person challenging the law would like to bring their lawsuit, which sometimes can minimize people's trust in the system if they think people are judge shopping and things like that. So that would be kind of the focus of the specialty courts.
And then another area that you said is almost, especially from your perch as a lawyer, is one of the more interesting conversations that have been a part of this Senate Select Committee on Judicial Oversight and Reform. Comes to the Judicial Performance Evaluation Commission. One of the other big concerns we hear about the Montana Supreme Court and our judiciary in general is it's almost like there's this double standard where they want to criticize everybody else. They want to take shots at everybody else. They want to demand transparency and uphold Montanans' right to know and our right to know what's going on in our government. You know, for example, if the Billings Gazette and KTVQ Television sued the Billings Police Department like they've done before to get access to public information, the courts will say, yeah, hey, City of Billings, you got to turn over this information. But yet the Montana Supreme Court doesn't want to turn over right to know public information themselves. In a similar regard, it seems like right now there's concerns with who is holding these judges or these Supreme Court justices accountable. Who has oversight over them? Is it just this good old boy system? And what kind of changes could be made there?
Yeah. So if there's anything that our committee's worked on that I really hope the legislature at large takes a good hard look at, it's the Judicial Performance Evaluation Commission, or JPEC, if you like brevity. The idea behind that, and, you know, something close to half the states in the United States have the concept of a JPEC, is the different branches of government and potentially other folks get to appoint parties, some of whom are lawyers, some of whom aren't lawyers, some of whom may be retired judges, to assist judges in having access to materials to help them be better. And then potentially, when judges run for re-election, making the public more aware of their view of how the judges are doing. Those would be, you know, more objective standards, like how quickly do judges get opinions out, and more subjective standards like bias. The reason I say I'm a big fan of that is, you know, two reasons. Number one, when you have the legislature is trying to do something, the executive branch is trying to do something, the judicial branch is trying to do something, then, you know, the public can kind of view it as those folks, you know, butting heads with their own biases. You know, the JPEC is designed, if it comes to pass, as a truly neutral, long-term group of people who can say, you know, are judges being too defensive? Are judges not being defensive enough? Is the legislature passing bad laws that the courts have no option other than striking down? Or maybe are the courts legislating from the bench? And I think it really takes it out of the sort of angry, you know, dialogue we see over the issue right now.
Well, and it sounds like the big picture, too, is it seems pretty obvious that there is almost a consensus in the state that there is that the judiciary, the judicial branch, the Montana Supreme Court needs to rebuild trust. Now, we can disagree on why that might be the case, whether, you know, folks on the right would say, here's why we don't trust them. Folks on in the middle might say, well, here's why. But either way, it seems like there's an agreement that there is a sense of a trust needs to be rebuilt within our judicial system here in Montana.
Yeah, and kind of a couple things to come to mind. The first is, you know, it would certainly be my expectation that the commission would tell the legislature and the Montana public the vast, vast, vast majority of our judges are doing a great job. And hopefully people respect that. The commission may say, though, a couple judges maybe could work a little harder. A couple judges could more openly hear everybody's side of things. Who knows what they would say? And then, you know, that's one area where we had truly national experts come speak to us. You know, one of whom is a retired Colorado Supreme Court justice, you know, Stanford law grad, somebody who suggested as a judge, she welcomed feedback on how she could be a better judge. And, you know, somebody who I don't know personally, I don't know what her beliefs are, but her background does not make her appear to be a crazed right-wing ideologue.
Yeah, she's simply saying, hey, this is what's being done in some other states. This is what's working in some other states. And I know, speaking of Colorado, the Independence Institute, that's where Rob Nadelson, former University of Montana constitutional law professor, he's down there with the Independence Institute now, and he has described the Montana Supreme Court basically as the worst in the country based on a few different metrics. Let's go into the phone lines here. We've got Skip in Hamilton. Skip, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for calling in.
I do, Aaron. Thank you. Can you hear me the way I have my phone? Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. We got you.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad you brought up Rob Nadelson, too. And he's written so many things about the Montana Supreme Court, like wearing the badge of honor, I believe it's a good way to put it, of being the most overturned in the country. But also, I wondered, committee that was put together, I believe it was put together by ex-Senate President Jason Ellsworth, and did it have an original intent, such as maybe possibly impeaching a judge? Or was there other things that it really wanted to delve into, like the cleanup, whether we should even have something like maybe an appellate court in Montana? Was that possibly a question? But also, do you think, and most important to me is, with all the money spent on all the different people that attended that, do you think there was anything really accomplished? Because, I mean, with all the attention that it got,
what got accomplished? Yeah, a couple of good questions there. Thanks for that. He brought up impeachment, impeaching public officials, impeaching judges potentially as well. I know State Senator Tom McGilvery, who I'm hoping to chat about this very topic again soon as well. Apparently, at the last meeting, this committee did recommend changing that type of language, basically saying that, hey, look, the current language is hundreds of years old. Micah Drew had a report about this. The current language is hundreds of years old, so we do need to have more modern language to make it a little bit easier to hold some of these folks accountable.
Yeah, so it's certainly a bill that the committee's talked about advancing is updating language on impeachment. You know, obviously, my hope is, while it's not a bad thing to propose legislation like that, you know, that we have other solutions that keep us from ever, you know, having to go down that road. I hope that's everybody's hope, because, you know, impeaching a judge or another elected official is something you hate to see, even if you think it's warranted. So,
all right. John Sinrud in Kalispell next up on the phone lines. John, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for the call.
Well, I did. And as the president of the Montana Landlord Association, the one thing that I have seen from judges around the state is if a landlord goes in pro se for a judge, like in Gallatin County, they expect that landlord to know everything about the law and treat them exactly as an attorney. And I've seen judges around the state that have misused or not allowed landlords to bring evidence prior or into the hearing, and they treat individuals differently. These landlords do not want to go out there and make a complaint before the Judicial Standards Commission Board because of fear that they still have to
there'd be retaliation.
Go and see that judge in the future.
Yeah, yeah, fear of retaliation for filing complaints. I mean, look at the retaliation is what I would call it, where they're trying to go after Attorney General Austin Knutson because of his criticisms of the court. Andrew Bilstein, your thoughts?
Yeah, so while I don't want to, you know, commandeer your show for a sales pitch for the JPEC, I'm hoping that's an example where, you know, this gentleman, rather than your only recourse being like the Judicial Standards Commission, the JPEC would do things like sending surveys to recent litigants in judges' courts, and you'd have the opportunity to respond anonymously, say, here's our concerns about this judge. The JPEC then talks to the judge, and hopefully we have better judges.
That's a good point, because why would you, even as a lawyer, want to openly criticize a judge? Because then they might go after you. There's that fear of retribution for you as well. Andrew Bilstein, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for volunteering to serve on this committee and be an independent voice.
Yeah, happy to do it. Thanks for having me.
All right. Yeah, thanks for being with us. Keep us posted, too, as the committees move forward.
This is where Montana Talks at with Lane Nordland.
It is Cat Grizz Week in Montana State defensive end Brody Grebe, the two-time All-American and Campbell Trophy finalist from Melstone, is excelling on and off the field. Not only is he busy on the gridiron, but he's also tackling agricultural challenges. Recently, I caught up with him and he discussed how he's working on an innovative algae biofuel project that could transform agriculture.
I grew up on a ranch, so I'm in eastern Montana. What ways can I maybe help improve my ranch? The ways that I can not have to rely on cattle completely in the future. I got fertilizer and cattle manure. I got water, well water, and I got land. And sunlight. Maybe not the best sunlight all year round in Montana, but we got some sunlight. What I wanted to do with that is I wanted to grow algae in these tubes to where I can extract the algae, make biofuel out of it, and then take the remains of the algae and I can feed it back to the cattle. You take the lipids out of the algae and you're left with a high protein source of feed. So you can feed this back to your cows and use it as that. And then also you can tailor these lipids that you extract from it. And it's a whole process, chemistry process after you do that, but you can turn it into biofuel. So you can turn it into gasoline, diesel, jet fuel, whatever it is.
A very outstanding young man from Millstone, Montana, MSU defensive end Brody Grebe. And go Bobcats. I'm Lane Nordblund.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, when you read this New York Post story, first let's jump into this one and then we'll jump right into your phone calls as well. 406-294-0970. It is now confirmed the violent Venezuelan prison gang, Tren de Aragua, you know, that same gang that was taking over entire apartment complexes down in Aurora, Colorado. We have the video footage to back it up. The Department of Homeland Security now confirming that Montana is one of several states that TDA is known to have a presence in. The New York Post reports that Homeland Security officials last week were warned in an internal department intelligence memo about TDA's growing presence across the country, most recently in Washington, D.C., Virginia, Montana, and Wyoming. And a report by Jamel Valencia for the National News Desk, I saw that report, it was carried by NBC Montana, also points out that the illegal alien suspected of murdering Georgia college student Lakin Riley is also connected to Tren de Aragua. And by the way, I just got a breaking news alert from Fox News that a verdict has been reached in the Lakin Riley murder trial. Let's see if they have upped. Okay, the suspect was found guilty on all 10 counts total, including one count of malice murder, three counts of felony murder, one count of kidnapping, one count of aggravated assault with intent to rape, one count of aggravated battery. Anyway, several counts here. So the murder suspect has now been found guilty of all 10 counts. This was the Jose Ibarra, the Venezuelan who killed Lakin Riley. By the way, if you guys didn't see the news update earlier this week, I was telling you on this show how some congressional Democrats are claiming that, well, we can't deport these illegal aliens because it'll cost too much money. They say it'll just cost too much money. Well, they had no problem flying these illegal aliens on chartered flights all across America. By the way, Jose Ibarra, the Tren de Aragua tied Venezuelan illegal alien, you know how he got to Georgia? On one of those very flights. This guy was set up. He was staying at a fancy hotel in New York City. One of his friends or family members had confirmed this at one of these hearings lately. They put him up in a fancy hotel in New York City, this illegal alien who had already had run-ins with the law. And then he got one of those nice flights paid for by you, the American taxpayer. And that's how he ended up in Georgia, where he murdered that young college student. And there's a 17-minute long 911 call where she's fighting for her life. But yeah, it's been confirmed that he is tied in with Tren de Aragua. And now it's been confirmed that Tren de Aragua is in Montana. What do you want to talk about? Phone lines are open, 406-294-0970. Logan in Roundup, good to hear from you. What's on your mind?
Morning, Aaron. Well, I was on hold when I just heard the news about Senior Jose getting exactly what he deserves, in my opinion. Won't bring peace to the family, but at least justice has been done in that case. One thing I wanted to talk about real quick, and I just happened to wake up this morning and have a light bulb moment about it, was that 2 weeks after the red wave that swept across this country that we needed and deserved, Biden okayed ATACMS inside of Russian territory. And that got me thinking that since we know the Democrats are always going to try to hold on to power, that got me thinking that if he allows Zelensky to use our weapons inside of Russian territory, and a declaration of war were to happen, the transfer of power, therefore, is not going to happen during a declaration of war according to the U.S. Constitution. Which then gets me thinking, is this the way that they're finally going to install Kackle and Kamala into the White House if all of that were to, you know, if all the cards were to fall into place and a declaration of war were to happen? Biden's not competent enough to walk upstairs, let alone lead a nation in war, use the 25th Amendment, and install Kamala Harris. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's the big concern. Chad Prather, I think, raised that concern the other day. I mean, the biggest concern right now is Joe Biden about to get us into World War III on his way out the door, right? And by the way, they've already used these attackums. Ukraine has already used these attackums after getting the green light from Biden, reportedly. And so now the United States embassy in Ukraine has been shut down because basically out of fears for the safety of all American personnel there. So they've now shut. So there's already been ramifications for this decision. But, you know, if you're somebody who supports the decision, you're asking, well, why didn't he do this earlier on? You know, why allow all these, you know, Ukrainians to get slaughtered in the meantime? But I think most people are very concerned. I mean, John Jackson and I talked about this yesterday, which is like, is, you know, the Democrats didn't even want to give Joe Biden the keys to the car to be the presidential candidate. But yet he's still got the nuclear codes and is potentially getting us into World War III on his way out the door. Yeah, very, very concerning, I would say. In fact, later this afternoon, around noon our time, I think I'm going to be doing an interview. I'm going to be on Jesse Kelly's program talking about this this very topic. Logan, great to hear from you. Thanks for your service. Thanks for calling in. John in Bozeman next up. John, what's going on?
Well, I want to, you know, we have to be proactive about this. Trinidad-Aragua is that there needs to be a tip station set up, and people need to start sending in, and we need to locate and neutralize these Trinidad-Aragua and have all of the community and stuff in on trying to find these people, locate them, and neutralize them.
Yeah. No, exactly. And I hope that there is a robust intelligence fusion cell at the state level that's got DHS sitting at the table, DOJ sitting at the table, all these federal, state, local law enforcement having a seat at that table so that they're sharing vital intelligence. Because as soon as Donald J. Trump is back in office, we're going to get Tom Homan in there, and we're going to start rounding up and deporting these criminal illegal aliens with the support of the majority of the American people. And it can't happen soon enough. I mean, just look at all of the criminal illegals that have been piling up in our jails here in Montana already. Just last week, there was a guy shooting at cops in Belgrade, Montana. And I don't think any of the local news media bothered to mention this fact in their news reporting, but the guy that was shooting at cops is currently on an ICE hold in the Gallatin County Jail. He's on a Immigration and Customs Enforcement detainer. Huh. I guess that's not a relevant fact when covering some of these local crime stories here. But no, now our state officials will have the ability to work with a Trump administration to get to deport these criminal illegal aliens. Next up, let's go to Jim in Great Falls. Jim, what's on your mind?
I just wish that Trump's pick for Attorney General Jack Nicholson, I mean Matt Gaetz, do the country a favor and step aside. I'm sick of all the candidates on both sides of the election this year with all their devious sexual miscuities. My father used to say, guilty or not, take responsibility for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. I don't want to hear about your sex life. Gaetz is not the only good candidate. I'm sure he's educated enough, but enough. We need to get to what you've been talking about, all this crime coming up. So quit putting pictures in my mind of your bedroom activities. But then on another note of the Country Music Awards tonight, boycott them. I mean, Beyonce dressing up like Pamela Anderson wearing a cowboy hat. How ridiculous. And The Rock in a shirtless leather vest with the cowboy hat shaped to look like it's on backwards. I mean, give me a break. They tried to rename a pickup a truck, rename their 20-acre petting zoo a ranch with a big archway. Welcome to our North 40. I mean, I remember years ago when the black rappers were mad because the white rappers had dreadlocks. The black community was outraged. Dreadlocks are our culture. Well, cowman hats are our culture. I'm tired of the Yellowstone wannabes wearing cowboy hats shaped to be worn backwards. It looks stupid. You don't see me on the ranch in spandex with a man bun and a backwards cowboy hat.
Why
but I
not?
Guess it's backwards. Well, because I know what my name is. I don't need to have my hat backwards so I can bend over to see what my name is. And while you're bent over, leave Montana and cowmen alone. Make your own plant-based cowburger somewhere else.
Back to Matt Gaetz, though. Look, I know there's a lot of Republicans and conservatives and certainly Democrats that don't like Matt Gaetz, but even the Biden DOJ did not press charges against Gaetz. So why would you believe the allegations against him when even the Biden DOJ didn't press charges against him?
And I don't. I don't believe it all. But why didn't they set this all up? They knew it was going to come out first. Why didn't they get ahead of it, be transparent, put this out here? Because according to there, he was with an 18-year-old. She came out, and then she was with her friend. And
So just tackle it more transparently. All right. Hey, thanks for the call.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
$500 a day. Your fine could be $500 a day. If you farmers and ranchers, or those of you who have your own LLC, if you don't fill out this one federal government form by the end of the year, $500 a day, you could be fined. I'm going to tell you about that. We're going to take you back to the Montana Farm Bureau 105th convention taking place right now. Gina Stevens is an accountant giving that important update to the Montana Farm Bureau. First, though, let's go to Al in Bozeman. Al, what's on your mind?
Well, how are you today? I'm doing well. Everything that we're worried about is baloney. The main thing we should be worried about is Vladimir Putin. The man has told us repeatedly, this is my yard, stay out of it. Don't do this, don't do that. We don't listen. The first thing old Pudding Brain ever did was, when he got in office, was he declared that Putin was a murderer. Well, that's a great way to start a relationship. Look, he doesn't want the unlimited Muslim immigration. He doesn't want the LGBTQ agenda rubbed down his throat. He wants Russia left to the Russians and not to be meddled with. I'd say take the man seriously. We're going to keep pushing him. We're going to keep pushing him. And he's going to let a 1,000-missile broadside go and just about wipe out half the earth. And this is because of what? Because of a man who can't even spell his name that's on his way out?
Yeah, that's the concern, is that Joe Biden on his way out is trying to get us into World War III. And, you know, and the other thing, of course, here is, you know, Putin also is slaughtering innocent people, and he has no problem slaughtering innocent people to try to reshape what once was the Soviet Union. But again, that's why we can't, you know, it's January 20th can't come soon enough when we get a president of strength back in the White House. You know, Vladimir Putin wasn't invading these places when Donald J. Trump was the president of the United States. He waits for weakness and then he strikes. All right. This is Gina Stevens. Gina Stevens is an accountant and a farmer rancher in the Hardin, Montana area. And she's been getting the word out at the Montana Farm Bureau convention taking place right now. FinCEN and the BOI form. Have you guys heard about this? The BOI form that many of you farmer ranchers, and if you've got your own LLC, you have to fill this form out according to the federal government. And a lot of people don't even know about it.
The big guys, like 5 million and over in assets, have been filling these out for years, but they've decided that they want to make sure that none of you have the Chinese government in your back pocket financing your small farm or ranch. So they are asking everybody else now that has an LLC and pretty much any entity that is registered with the Secretary of State has to file. And it's actually a simple form. You go onto the FinCEN website and fill out the BOI report. You do have to upload your driver's license, but other than that, it's a pretty simple deal. But you have to report all the ownership of whatever entity you have. And I've been kind of surprised that I go around and talk to some of the farm and ranch organizations around here and the lack of their having heard of this. And I understand, because anytime it's in an article, it starts out in a totally different way that doesn't catch your eye. I mean, I went by it several times before I finally understood that, hey, this really pertains to a lot of people I know. And what I'm really afraid of is that there are a number of farmers and ranches that formed an LLC years ago, kind of forgot about it, mom and pop, you know, and the lawyer said, oh, do an LLC, and they registered it with the state, and then they don't do anything with it. They kind of forget about it. Well, that's exactly who's targeted here. And if you forget, it's a $571 a day starting January 1st.
No matter how small your LLC, you could maybe make $500 a year out of that LLC, but if you don't fill out this federal form, they're going to charge you $500 a day. Is that right?
Correct. Yes. If you're registered with the Secretary of State, you've got to file this thing. And it's a substantial fine for not doing so. So I'm trying to get the word out.
It's so crazy the amount of paperwork that the federal government dictates that people have to fill out. Like even just with our radio station, for example, they want these quarterly reports submitted. And it's like, for Pete's sake, give me a break. And it's like, do they think people just have all the staff in the world? We're not the freaking government here. We don't have all the staff in the world to do your paperwork all day long. But they just think people have all the time in the world, because they got all the time in the world, apparently. So
exactly, yes. It's not a very good thing to have to do, but they are requiring it, and it's a little bit intrusive, you think, but they actually have the same information on the Secretary of State website, so they're not really gaining any. I'm not sure why they can't just pull it off of that, but they're.
That's what I don't get. Why don't they just get the. Because, when I fill out the LLC paperwork, they'll ask you who's the owners, if it's you that are the sole proprietor, basically, or if you've got multiple owners that are part of that LLC. So why can't they just request this information from the Secretary of State's office instead of request it from hundreds of thousands of Montanans to now have to go try to figure out how to do all this during the holidays while they're trying to figure out year-end taxes and everything else?
All right. Yeah, anyway, thanks to Gina Stevens, an accountant. She's on the Montana Tax Committee for the Montana Farm Bureau Federation. Full audio on our Montana Talks website, so we talk in a little bit more depth. But basically, if for those of you that have internet access, of course, you search BOI, FinCEN, FinCEN, search BOI FinCEN form, and it should pull right up for you. You can fill it out online, and then you have to upload a copy of your driver's license, a photo of your driver's license, but that's the main information they're looking for. So if you pull it up online, you can submit it online as well, and that'll make it a little bit easier. But it's absurd they're asking for this in the first place.